Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has said that he's been deeply saddened at the loss of life inflicted by deadly flooding from a glacier in the Indian Himalayas at the weekend. At least 14 people reportedly died and over 170 are missing after the tragedy in Uttarakhand province on Sunday, which also saw 15 people rescued initially. The United Nations stands ready to contribute to ongoing rescue and assistance efforts, Mr. Guterres said in a statement. According to reports, a torrent of water, rock and debris from the glacier cascaded into communities living downstream, also damaging a dam. Glacier bursts and the flash floods that they cause are extremely destructive natural hazards. The Himalayan region is particularly vulnerable to such disasters, which have been made more likely by climate change and temperature rise. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi has reiterated how important it is for Venezuela's neighbors to continue to help all those leaving the country in search of food, work and shelter. More than 5 million Venezuelans have left their homes so far, seeking safety from violence, insecurity, lack of food and medicine, and increasing poverty, according to the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. The refugee agency chief's appeal came on Sunday during his visit to Colombia, which, like many countries which share a border with Venezuela, now hosts the majority of those displaced. Mr. Grandi met the governor of La Guajira and local mayors in a region that hosts 150,000 Venezuelan refugees and migrants. In a tweet, Mr. Grandi congratulated them for working daily for the dignity of those fleeing and for their peaceful coexistence with host communities by promoting the regularization of refugees and migrants. Alarm now over deeply worrying conditions in northeast Syria's camps, where the wives and children of extremist fighters have been detained for years, and an appeal to 57 countries to bring back their nationals immediately. At the Al-Hol camp, the largest camp for refugees and internally displaced people in Syria, more than 80% of those being held are women and children, senior UN-appointed independent rights experts said on Monday. Leading the appeal, Fernula Ni-Elian said that the situation was so dire that grandparents are watching their grandchildren starve when talking to them on their cell phones. Speaking to journalists in Geneva, the special rapporteur explained that there was no reason but a lack of political will to explain why some countries, with just a handful of detainees were being held in Syria, had not made more efforts to get them home. Ms. Ni-Elian noted that some states had been successful in liberating their nationals, while non-state armed groups, such as the Kurdish Syrian Defense Forces, SDF, were eager for them to go.
I would urge those countries to bring back their nationals. The SDF, certainly the de facto authorities in the region, do not want these individuals in their camps. They are pleading for them to be taken home. We have other countries, including the United States, which has offered and supported many of these returns. So we have other countries prepared to help. There is no viable excuse other than political will that explains the lack of return in these cases.
Fianola Ni-Elian, Special Rapporteur on the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights While Countering Terrorism, ending that item. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Tonight and a one below degree tomorrow morning. So we're right in the middle of the Arctic freeze. As the Game of Thrones goes, we're like, you know, it's like the ice wall. And today, what a perfect time to have an impeachment hearing. Everybody's glued their TVs and radios, and we've got John Grant. And actually, I can't believe it. Dave Lindorf called in, but we're going to put him, keep him where he has to listen in for a minute because, you know, it's like he's always busy, John Grant. You know what I mean? This can't be happening.
Well, Dave is a very busy man. Yeah, he's, you know, he's now a filmmaker. He's a producer of a film. He's got some money for
that. Oh, we're not
film.
Supposed to say that.
Oh,
we're not supposed
shit.
To say that, John.
Oh, we're not.
That's
excuse me. Never mind.
Yeah, there's some big works. There's some big stuff going on with Lindor at thiscan'tbehappening.net. And, you know, of course, John and I, you know, we're just the comedy team. I guess we're not really Saturday Night Live. I guess we're the Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, we're the
Follies.
Tuesday pedestrian comedians, you know. We're just...
Yeah, right. John, it is such an interesting time we're living in. I've got to put Dave Lindorf on. He actually did call. He called in on his own. I called him earlier, and he was very busy. All right, let's see.
Well,
Dave Lindorf, is this the Dave Lindorf?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, John.
Here we are in Kansas all of a sudden.
Yeah, right here in Kansas.
I can't believe we're in Kansas. I clicked my heels.
You're in Kansas.
I clicked my running shoes, and here I am.
This can't be happening. We're in Kansas. By the way, I just ran it. There's like books on called This Can't Be Happening. I was trying to find it. There's all sorts of things on the web with called This Can't Be Happening. We're not alone.
I discovered that when I titled my book that, and it came out. And 2004, and I thought, whoa! It turns out that a lot of books get the same name.
Of course.
It's weird. The titles don't seem to get copyrighted along with the books.
For some reason, I can't get on. I was on This Can't Be Happening, and all of a sudden, no matter what I did, I couldn't. They wouldn't come up anymore. Was somebody working on it or something today?
Ron has a piece that he just posted today on the Bolivian.
But I mean, I wonder if somebody was working on the site because it's suddenly locked up. I couldn't get in.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean logging in?
No, I couldn't even raise the site. I was on it for a while, but then I tried it again and couldn't get it anymore. I don't know why.
I have to interject.
Okay, well, don't worry. But it's probably a temporary thing.
So no. Somebody... It's important. It's important because I tried to get on Law and Disorder Radio to download the Thursday program, listeners, and I couldn't get on it either. And I checked out antiwar.com, and I couldn't get on it. You think there's some sort of what's going on? What do you think?
No,
well,
my paranoia.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It opens up for readers. I mean, it's possible that May 1st is working on it, and so we can't log in. I don't know. I haven't tried.
Readers
can get to it.
It's probably not a problem. So let's not worry about it right now.
Well, you don't think the neoliberals, Sleepy Joe? No, they wouldn't do that on.
Well, my paranoid antenna was that somebody hacked in and they said, well, let's make it so Grant can't even get on This Camping Happening to put anything up, you know.
Listen to me, listeners and YouTube guys. Anything's possible. Many workers in Kansas on unemployment have not been able to get their unemployment checks, and it was released in the news media yesterday locally that Governor Laura Kelly was receiving unemployment benefits by a hack.
Oh, yeah, I heard there was a huge scandal about getting unemployment benefits. It's been like, you know, because of all that extra money.
Well,
why
no,
is she unemployed?
Kansas,
what do you mean?
Well, I think that was a hack. I mean, it was seriously a hack. Our unemployment insurance computer system in Kansas, the Department of Labor has, get this, 40-year-old software in it and on running on 20-year-old machine computers.
Yeah.
And they're unable to keep up with the traffic. They can't even give you a real accurate statement how many are unemployed. I have friends who have filed unemployment and they found out that their account was hacked and it was the benefits, the unemployment checks were being sent to one of the Carolinas, North or South Carolina. Seriously. Mm-hmm. And it came out in the news media today that Governor Laura Kelly of Kansas was receiving unemployment benefits. That's serious. You know, that's a serious hack that's gone on, and it's preventing people who really need the help from getting it in Kansas. And it's just like the impeachment proceedings today in D.C. I mean, not the impeachment proceedings itself, but the whole way that they went about taking over the Capitol building on January 6th. January 6th was a huge snark. It was a carnival of killer clowns. I mean, there were so many goddamn clowns snarking. They didn't think it was serious. You know, it's just like we can shit and piss in the hallways of Kansas of the Congress. We can shit and piss in those hallways. Who cares if the African American janitors have to clean it up? And we can assault their Capitol Police officers. Most of the Capitol Police officers are Republicans. I don't understand why we have to. You know, I mean, seriously. What do you think is going on with the impeachment today and the aftermath of January 6th? Dave Lindorf, John Grant.
What, should I go first?
You go ahead.
Well, help yourself.
Yeah. I think it's pretty clear that they're Biden wants the thing to be done fairly quickly, and I think that they probably. The prosecutors from the House feel that they don't need to run through a whole bunch of, you know, of witnesses to what was done because everybody saw it. You know, I think they're going to show videos of Trump inciting, and I think they're going to show the videos of what was actually going on, and they're going to make the case that, you know, not only did Trump clearly incite them with the tweets that they'll show and the videos they'll show and all of that, but they'll also show that, you know, he was clearly aware of what was happening at the Congress, you know, all the violence, the beating of police officers, you know, all of that stuff, and of calls from Congress members of what was happening, and that he did nothing about it. And then he got up at the end and went on, you know, I guess he put out a video of himself telling people to go home and we love you. Right. So, I think they feel like they've got the goods for that. And so they'll spend their time throwing out the bogus claims by the idiots in the Republican Party in the Senate who have been arguing that it's unconstitutional, the Rand Paul position that it's unconstitutional to impeach a president who's already out of office. That's been thoroughly debunked by major Republican attorneys, even now a group of attorneys who are in the Federalist Society, that sort of, hangout for like Scalia, like what do they call it? The verbatimist followers of the Constitution.
Constructionalists.
Constructionalists. There you go. Biblical constructionists of the Constitution wrote a thing saying that it was silly to say you couldn't impeach a president who was already out of office, and secondly, that the claim that they're making that he had freedom of speech and so whatever he said is perfectly constitutional doesn't apply to impeachment and to incitement.
Right. Well, I just watched the first two Raskin and the guy, black dude from Colorado, the congressman, really articulate. He and they made it quite clear, you know, citing all the what you just cited, that you know, what's really at issue here, and as many people say, is like, you know, if there is any reason at all for the impeachment concept in the Constitution, you know, this, quote, crime is it. You know, I mean, this was worse than Johnson or anything Clinton had done, or even, you know, what Trump had done earlier for the first impeachment. So that, you know, this is a situation where they explain it, you know, they explain it out till they're blue in the face, the Democrats. It's whether, you know, those 17 Republicans, that's what it takes, are going to vote for the Constitution, or are they going to vote against it? To me, it's a really clear decision they have to make, to go with this clown that clearly was authoritarian in instinct and tried everything he could, including, you know, from the election to January 20th. It was just incredible that, you know, are you going to vote for the Constitution, or do you say, fuck it, let's just go with anything goes, you know, power rules, and, you know, we don't need laws, and, you know, it's that old argument. Do we have a rule? Do we have a country of laws, or do we have a country of men? You know, that was in the sexist age when that's what, you know, they couched it that way. So, you know, I mean, it seems like a no-brainer, you know, morally and criminally, and that especially since the jurors in this thing were hiding under their desks, you know, during the event. You know, it's a pretty amazing sort of confrontation in court here that, you know, everybody claims that the Republicans are not going to give them those 17 votes. But, you know, everybody on the Democratic side are going into, so, well, I'm not accepting that resignation. I think, you know, if these people really understood, you know, what is at stake here, you know, that it's not a given that they're going to vote to acquit him. But, you know, let's see. This is the suspense. This is the drama. And it's just beginning. So it's... you know, it's a real interesting case of theatrics here. Everybody's watching it, you know. And, you know, as this guy from Colorado just said, he says, you don't have to be a constitutional scholar to understand this, you know. And so they're not going with witnesses and all this kind of trial stuff. They're going with video, and they're going to make a TV show out of this the American public can watch, along with senators. And you know, it's a trial by TV because we all watched it real time live when it happened, you know. So really, really interesting.
They've been showing the right now as we speak in the first hour. They've been showing some of the videos and slideshows of the perpetrators. And it's very interesting to see. And then they go into some really interesting constitutional readings of the Constitution and before, trying to establish the history of the use of the word impeachment. I believe it goes back to English law the empire, the British Empire. So it's interesting. I think it's good for, you know, it's interesting. I think it's good for the people who stormed the Capitol building. To learn, and many, you know, tens of millions of other people today, to get an abbreviated civics course, and of course, then we understand why they need to.
Yeah,
They need to go to jail.
Speaking
I mean,
of which, did you see the report that somebody did a analysis of the people whose names have come up in all of these, you know, among all the 800 who stormed the Capitol, and they found out that almost none of them voted.
Yeah, really? That's interesting. Wow.
Well, a lot of them, Dave, I guess, I think I read some of the results of the survey done by some universities, I think, but still, a lot of them were not strictly working class. Hell, a lot of them were petty bourgeois business owners. They were not really working class people. Now, there was a buttload, maybe 10,000 or more outside the Capitol that I said earlier were acting like sightseers. They were sort of tourists. You know, they came in,
right.
You know, they came in their church bus and they're watching the siege warfare
right.
tactics used by the advanced guard, the vanguard of the reactionaries, which is, you know, militias.
Yeah, well,
obviously
the most reactionary and potentially violent elements, you know, pumped up with adrenaline and testosterone and God knows what other, you know, intoxicants they might be taking, you know, they pushed to the front. And so the front became this absolutely crazed sort of wall that was push, 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 push. And, you know, we saw it. It just overwhelmed everybody. And I'm kind of curious about the two Capitol cops who committed suicide. There was one cop, big fat guy, who was just, you know, the camera was on him for a long time, and he just looked devastated that he had been destroyed, and they were just walking right over him, and he had completely given up. And he could see the camera on him, and it really, really troubled him. I was just wondering if he was one of the guys that, you know, went home and shot himself.
My suspicion is I've been at a lot of demonstrations at the Capitol, not demonstrations, but lobbying efforts and sometimes protest actions, and sometimes as a protester, sometimes as a journalist. And one of the things I noticed is, you know, like people, there were a lot of times when people like, you know, Code Pink or other
right.
organizations would go and sit in a congressperson's office and, we'd go into a hearing, like on impeachment back in 2006 and, go to the, House Judiciary Committee under John Conyers, you know, and we'd sit in the audience and, you know, we'd have signs and things that you're not supposed to have and stuff. And we'd be trying to urge him we'd be urging him to, you know, seriously, you know, open up a impeachment hearing and things, which he kept not doing because Pelosi didn't want to, and, you know, things like that. And then they'd remove you from the hearing if you got rowdy. Right. And so these Capitol cops would come in and they were the most gentle police that I'd ever experienced.
Right.
You know,
they
had instructions from the Congress that you weren't supposed to, you know, roust the electorate, you know, when they came in and, you know, engaged in First Amendment protected.
Yeah, you're not supposed to beat up little Medea Benjamin there. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So it was like, I mean, in other words, they had a kind of stance that was supposed to be not the typical cop. You know, they weren't
right.
Philly cops on the street. They weren't New York cops. They weren't LAPD. They were Capitol Police, and they had this sense
right.
that, you know, you had certain rights to come into the building and be a little bit rowdy, you know, at least to, you know, obstruct things a bit and stuff
right.
like that.
Democracy is a messy business, you know, exactly.
Yeah. So I think that they, you know, I mean, in fairness to the Capitol cops, which I'm normally not fair with, fair with cops, you know, when these things started to happen, I think their position was to be kind of, you know, gentle about keeping them from, you know, just tearing the place up, but at the same time, you know, trying to hold things back, but they didn't want to use the kind of brutality that they were capable of, or that other cops would do.
Yeah, one did shot a woman dead coming through the door. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was
the
point.
Yeah, so it was rare, though. It was
that's
rare.
A good example. You know, they're capable of it. They also shot that black woman dead when she made a wrong turn a few years ago and had, I think, two kids in her car in the back seat, and they didn't even wait. You know, that was closer to 9/11, and she made a wrong turn and came right towards the front of the building, and they just shot her car up, and they killed her, and fortunately missed the kids. But you know, they're capable of it, but they were using restraint to the point that it suddenly was too late for them to act.
They were using, at least in one case, that one very pointed case where they snatched this one cop on the stairs and were going to beat the hell out of him and kill him. He thought they were going to kill him. And he says, very famously says now, it's a beautiful statement. He says, he thought of shooting somebody, and then he thought, well, if I shoot, they're going to kill me. Oh, no question, they're going to kill me.
And then
he said, well, okay. Then I told him, well, I have children. You know, please don't kill me. I have children, and that worked for them, and they didn't kill him. And he says later, a really cool statement. He says, I want to thank them for not killing me, but fuck them for being there, you know? It was just brilliant. It's like, thank you, but fuck you for being there. And so to me, that example showed that it wasn't necessarily restraint as much it was they were just absolutely overwhelmed. And, I could shoot somebody, but then I'm dead, you know, so survival comes in. And so they just, get pushed around. And so it's all, people hitting each other with sticks and things like that.
Yeah. Well, when that woman came through the window of the door and she was, and there were all those people behind her, like a real mob, and they shot her. That was when there actually were still members of Congress in the hall, and they were protecting people. And I think that was a point, a bridge too far. And so they, they took a offensive action at that point.
Well, the guy who shot her was absolutely, justified. I mean, there was no question about it. And they're lucky that more people weren't shot.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot more guns that they had there. They could have.
Well, in fact, when the woman was shot, she fell back and she was down and she was bleeding pretty seriously from the neck. And it was two police officers, I believe, who did first aid on her. So there were cops right there amongst this gang as they were banging this door down, And they were impotent. There was nothing they could do, apparently,
Well, they could have pulled they could have pulled their guns from the outside and said, all right, stop, we'll shoot, and that would have done something. But
there's a great Salgado, a famous photographer in Latin America, of a gold mine where all these, hundreds of thousands of people in this messy, unbelievable labor, and they're all on the side of a hill, very hardworking people. And there's one guard, and he's got a gun out, a long gun. And there's this very strapping fella's got his hand on the barrel. And the look on the cop's face is terror, because, I can shoot this son of a bitch, but, it's going to be like fucking ants. They're going to be all over me,
That photograph, I've seen it. It's like, it's really like out of a scene from Dante's Inferno.
Yeah,
it's an amazing,
of course, well, it is. You're right. But that one, it shows the power of a police officer has limits, And I think what that photo showed is what went on in the Capitol, that a lot of those cops were just overwhelmed. And two of them couldn't live with themselves afterwards, and shot themselves or something. It's pretty amazing. And for you know, for Republicans in the Senate to say, well, we're, you know, this shouldn't be tried. Well, you know, as you pointed out, Dave, I mean, all these, you know, reactionary conservatives all say, of course, it's legal. You know, it's legal because you can then prohibit the man from ever running, you know, for office again. So, you know, there's a reason for having the trial after he's out of office. I mean, it's a no-brainer. And they got, you know, Bruce Castor, the district attorney from Norristown, up here, right? I mean, this guy must be
lawyer.
He's the one that refused to indict Bill Cosby.
Right.
And then it was another DA that did indict him. But, you know, Bruce Castor must be such a goddamn loser these days that this is what he's going to try to do to make a name for himself and get a job or something. I don't know. But, you know, it seems like he's you know, Trump demanded that his lawyers, the third argument was going to be that he won the election by a landslide, and it was justice.
Can't give up that.
and you know, his lawyers finally told him that, look, you know, they're going to laugh you out of town. You know, you may actually be convicted for such a goddamn liar. You know, so you can't use that. And so they're not using that, which leaves him with nothing, you know, it seems to me.
Right, he doesn't have any.
His
First Amendment claim is insane.
Right. And, you know, if they're smart, and I think they're doing this, there's a very strategic window as you enter one of the doors that was smashed, and they're going to leave it smashed. You know,
right.
As, you know, probably put a plaque by it, you know, that this was a historic moment that's not going to go away. And so, you know, as the Republican Party, its future is split, you know, between what the Lynn Cheneys and the, the Trump clones, you know, what is her name? Marjorie Taylor Goomba. What the hell's her last name? I forgot. But Green.
The Colorado
Congresswoman Green. You know, you got Lynn Cheney and Congresswoman Green. They were both voted on. You know, Lynn Cheney, the cowardly bastards. They did it all in a secret ballot. But why couldn't they do, and of course they could, why couldn't they do the vote on Green as a secret ballot, you know, and you know she would have been crucified at a secret ballot. You know, so the Republican Party is facing a major split.
As our truck driving listener Privy Hunter commented, he says, I hope that, referring to the grand old party, he says, I hope they cook in their own shit, quote
unquote.
I hope they cook in
that.
Their own shit. He's a truck driver, so he's profane, but profound. And
Mark.
Yeah, his name's Mark, but he is prefers his truck. What do you call the CB radio? Privy Hunter.
Uh-huh.
That's what he goes by. Privy Hunter.
Privy Hunter. That's good.
Yeah, he did.
So he doesn't have a privy in his truck, you mean, like a bucket or something?
Yes, he does. Actually, he does. So we'll let him explain that.
Okay.
As a former
truck driver, and hopefully a profound and still profane one, I would point out that I read a poll from 2017, Gallup poll, that showed that 38% of Americans believe that man was created in God's image over a period of 10,000 years ago. And that's 38% of Americans, which is a larger percentage than the percent of eligible age of potential voters are Republicans.
Right.
So, you know, most, which leads me to believe that most of Republicans probably fall into that category, with the remainders of them independents. And,
Makes sense.
So when those are the people, remember, those are the people that these Republicans are appealing to.
True.
For and hoping to win future elections. So
that's why very likely they're all going to acquit him. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no question.
Because because these people believe that, you know, Trump as you know, gross and obscene and amoral as he is pushing their God's agenda for them.
That's a showstopper there. Well, I don't know how to answer that one. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
come on, John. our local in-house Saint Augustine here. That can't be happening Tuesdays. I mean, we have Saint Augustine in the terms of John Grant. You're listening to John Grant and Dave Lindorf on, and you can call in with the switchboard. It's actually very active. Area code 646-716-8652. Again, it's 646-716-8652.
So you're going to provoke or tweak these two lefty atheists here, you know?
I know. You're going to get calls from Indiana. Who knows? I mean, we get all kinds of calls. And the switchboard.
Oh yeah, let's get it. How's Mike Pence doing out there in Indiana?
I gotta coax the listeners in. You know, it's like, okay, you have to punch one, otherwise I'm not going to put you on. You have to punch one on to let me know you went on. But honestly, Dave Lindorf and John Grant, I mean, the situation is such that I think that many of the people who voted for Donald J. Trump. Even watching Newsmax, I have to watch Newsmax out here. I mean, they're having to really stumble over themselves about how Donnie, the Great Orange One, did not provoke this March on America, aka the Capitol building, because that's what it said: March on America. And, in a billboard at the thing. I mean, and who can forget Kimberly Guilfoyle? She's the hottie who had a hot relationship
with the
current governor of California.
She's a hot barracuda.
She's a hot barracuda, and she then went on to work with Fox News. And then listeners, go to YouTube and check out, just search Kimberly Guilfoyle. You'll see her in the VIP tent behind the stage on the January 6th of a riot. You'll also read about her on January 5th, the night before, at the old postal building, which is now Trump Hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue, in an exclusive appearance with Mike Lindell, the pillow man.
Oh,
this,
my God.
My pillow.
I heard him go off, and he was actually shut off on what one of those right wing TV stations.
Oh God, they'd had enough of him.
He said, "Shut up!" and took him off the.
Oh my God! And then she appears in the white VIP tent behind the stage that day, shimmering. Oh my God, she's got this really sexy. A dance. I was watching, and
you
I think
seem to like her, Mike.
Is I think I do. I got a problem. I think. Is it Eric or Don? I mean, Eric is Eric or Don? Don Jr.
Don.
Or Eric or
she's
Don
Jr.'s girlfriend. Don Jr.'s girlfriend.
Okay. Well, I'm immediately ready
Eric,
to take
Eric
him
is
on.
Married, I think. Eric has a wife.
I think it's probably. Listen, I think it's trial by combat time for me not to. I learned this from Rudy Giuliani. I'm ready. I'm ready to go to trial by combat for.
I would go you one better. I'd say trial by mud wrestling. That's the way I want it. You know.
Well, if she's doing it, I would go along with that.
You?
That's for sure. But I don't know.
Uh-oh.
I don't know.
The show is descending.
I don't want to mud wrestle with the Trump boys, you know what I mean? Or Donnie himself either. So, but I'll tell you something. These are unique times. I think it's sort of it's like a Dave Lindorf. I know you're a very highly educated guy, and you do all kinds of incredible things that nobody else can do that I know. I just have to ask you this question. Do you think the country is getting closer to a trailer park?
You mean a national trailer park?
America, yes. As trailer park. You like that?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, more and more people have to live in them. And,
right.
You know, it's I mean, I see them cropping up everywhere. And eventually we'll all live in trailers. Mentally, I think we're descending to that, you know, like,
right.
And no offense to people who live in trailers, but,
right.
You know, we're definitely reaching a point where we have people who don't know how to think logically,
right.
Have no conception of anything science oriented, just totally don't get it. And, you know, I think maybe science has gotten so complicated now, you know, moving into quantum theory and, you know, things you have to see with an electron microscope. And so people, you know, just throw up their hands and don't even try anymore. You
yeah,
can't
but they,
just
they,
F
they
equals
throw
MA.
Up their hands. They throw up their hands and they succumb to religion, of course. But they use the products of all this incredible science over the last 50 years. The fucking iPhones and everything else that
and
makes
hospitals.
That
they
makes
go to the, they
that,
go to the
that
hospital
made
and
January
6th
possible, you know, and
yeah,
but they're against science, you know. It's like
right,
you know how to use an iPhone and you use it and you know tweet all over the place and yada yada yada, but you know you're against science and you're for the red calf and the apocalypse and, you know, and Revelation and all that kind of crap. You know, it's the end times are coming, you know, here we are and look out. And but at the same time.
Yeah, but when they can't see anymore, they go and they get robotic cataract
surgery.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, let's escalate and get robotics here. Yeah, but science, oh, no, we don't believe in science.
Well, I mean, it's sort of like is it possible that we are going into a period what Yano Farquhar, I don't know how to pronounce his name, the former Greek finance minister from Greece. He said we're going into a period of techno-feudalism. That's his word.
I agree with that. In fact, I've made that argument that, you know, the idea of thesis, antithesis, synthesis. If you know that Hegelian idea, and I only half understand it in a half baked way, but if you look at feudalism and you look at 1624 and the Treaty of Westphalia and the creation of the nation states and you know the Renaissance and the Enlightenment and all that coming out of the Dark Ages and feudalism, that if you can look at the nation states are on the ropes. And one thing that's putting them on the ropes is the fragmentation of loyalties and, you know, everybody's a journalist with their iPhone and everything. It's just atomizing and breaking down all those nation states. So corporations and other power centers vie with nation states for power in this world. And it is then a synthesis of feudalism.
Mm-hmm.
And the nation state, it's coming out of it, and corporations are like feudal lordships and all that kind of stuff. I think that is a real thing that's happening, you know, a Zeitgeist thing that's happening for sure.
Right.
We are feudalizing. We are becoming more feudal-like, you know, with warlords and the rise of, authoritarianism. You know, basically Trump wanted, he didn't want to be a president of the United States in a constitutional republic, you know, where you arrive at who leads by democracy. He wanted to be a feudal lord. You know, he wanted you to come up and kiss his picking ring and he would have his fool with a funny hat, you know, and, you know, it was.
Oh, you mean, wait a minute, you mean like Kevin McCarthy? He's done it twice now. He's got down.
Yeah, you could say Kevin McCarthy's his fool. You know, the guy with the funny hat that would, you know, he had the warlords always had a fool to make him laugh, you know, and if he did the joke wrong, he'd have him killed, of course, but.
All right.
Those were the days, you know, those were the days that people like Donald Trump aspired to.
Yeah, but I want to hear what Dave says, because Dave, you know, he's more sophisticated than you and I, John.
Well, of course, I'll defer to Dave.
I mean, what do you think of the word, Dave, what do you think of the word techno-feudalism by Yanni, the finance minister, former finance minister of Greece? I mean, you think that's a real term?
I think
that sort of...
I think he's talking about something else. I think he's talking about how, you know, we become so beholden to our lifestyle and our ability to earn a living that people basically belong to their company. You know,
right?
It's more the idea that, you know, for example, there are studies that show that the U.S. has less social mobility than almost any other developed country, like in Europe. You can track it. People can move from working class to middle class to, you know, even higher in Europe more easily than in the United States. In the United States, how you're born pretty much defines how you're going to live your life. And that's counter to the mythology of America, which dates from, you know, I don't know, the 1700s and 1800s, when you could almost become anything in America, you know, with chutzpah and luck. But that's not true anymore. Most people are stuck for life in whatever they're born into in this country.
And that, so you don't believe in the Horatio Alger myth anymore?
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. And of course, nobody understands Horatio Alger either. I mean, it's not that sort of a long time waddlerization you know, Horatio Alger, who basically was into writing stories that had like a you know, unexpected twist at the end.
It was all about a person bringing themselves up by their bootstraps from capitalism and all that, right?
Yeah. But I mean, what really set him out was his unexpected twist at the end of the story, but. I think Vaniakis, I can't remember how he pronounces his name. He's a brilliant guy. And I think he's looking at the social construct in the United States or the world, you know, of these huge corporations that really control our lives in ways that we don't even fathom.
Well, I mean, this is the synthesis of this new technology that it is driving us to a more. I accept that idea of the techno feudalism. I like it that you know, this technology is you know. I mean, McLuhan talked about technology and tribalism, you know, and like taking us back to the. You know, to the days of in the cave at night with the storytellers and all that, and the, you know that the breakdown of human culture and human societies by this all this technological innovation is really changing everything, and the, you know, the rise of authoritarianism is all part and parcel of it, and so
our,
yeah,
you know, our colleague Alfredo Lopez, mm-hmm. former
right.
young lord,
uh-huh.
who's a techno whiz. I mean, he is very much of a mind that the internet has transformed social activism, and you know, offers this incredible ability to organize and you know, build out you know, movements and stuff. But, you know, at the same time, it has it is that sort of synthesis, antithesis,
exactly.
You know, thing that, you know, on the one hand, it really is true that the Internet has made possible, you know, really good organizing. But
yeah,
at the same
exactly.
time, it completely detaches people from society. And so many people are just totally lost in this.
Yeah, but what you're saying, what you're saying is, yeah, it's a great tool for organizing, but it's also a great tool for imperialism. It's a great tool for corporatism. It's a great tool for
propaganda.
Oppression and control and all these things that we activists are supposedly using the Internet to oppose. So what happens is it turns the world into a cyber war zone. Instead of a Cold War, we have a cyber war. And we're in it. We're in it right now up to our fucking necks. And that's because activism certainly uses the Internet, but the reactionary oppressive elements use it just as well and arguably more effectively sometimes. That's the frightening part about it.
Yeah, they have much more power and ability to use it.
Of course, they have resources. And,
but you know, if we had an education system that was designed to actually educate and
critical
teach people
thinking,
to think,
yeah, absolutely,
you could
yeah.
do it. But most people can't tell what's true and what's not true
right.
on the Internet. It's very easy to find out.
Well,
but,
this is why
people
this
don't
is
even
why
bother.
We don't,
if
why we don't have a critical thinking curriculum from first grade to 12th grade, you know, teaching them, oh, why, Johnny, does this clown want to have your mommy buy something? Now, let's analyze that little Johnny, you know.
Yeah,
up to 12th grade where you're studying, you know, what is truth? What is reality? You know, what is all this crap that we deal with all the time? You know, so people really understand how to address the way the Internet works on our minds. But in this country, which is based on bullshit and marketing, you know, it's what's written on the outside of the goddamn box, not necessarily what's in the box, that, of course, with the corporate pressures and lobbyists, you're not going to get a critical thinking curriculum in American schools. It's just not going to happen because it would upset the whole damn apple cart. You know, you give it about 10 years of a really serious critical thinking, curriculum, give it 10 years, and you're going to be breeding subversives like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, well, you don't have 10 years. And I think the universal access to all human knowledge. I think like the QAnon people are a good example of propaganda steering them into a niche. And I think they are learning. I think people are learning how to use their newfound ability to search for anything and to be critical thinking. You know,
You're right.
Even the illiterate serfs knew the king was a son of a bitch. You know what I mean? And knew
the
local noble.
Bizarre.
And they didn't. They couldn't read. They had no. And they knew that the local noble, who was charging them rent, and you know, actually not even rent. I mean, they were just literally working for food. Knew that. That's feudalism. I mean, I think there might be something to that in a different way.
I
in
saw
the 21st
this,
century.
You know, when I lived in China back in the early 90s, I traveled a bit in the countryside and got to meet, dirt poor peasants living in mud huts with dirt floors. And I swear to God, these people were savvier than most of the Americans I knew from before I went to China. That
probably,
you know,
true.
And the reason is because they had lived in an oppressive society all their lives. the first, you know, if they were older, they lived in the pre-revolutionary times when the landlord was the boss and that was all there was to it, to, you know, a time when party leaders were, party officials were in charge, and they had all the power and you had none. And,
right.
And these people knew that all of these people were evil and self aggrandizing, and they looked at everything with a jaundiced eye, and you know they made their way through it. They couldn't escape it, but they made their way through it by understanding that all these people were evil, and to be, you know, watched out for and guarded against.
Right.
And so that's kind of skepticism is completely
right.
missing from most Americans. You know, what Americans do is they pick sides and they believe
right.
these leaders.
You're right.
And it's a trait. It's a herd mentality that you don't see in societies that are much more, you know, much less educated.
Right.
In a formal sense,
well,
maybe illiterate even.
You're talking about the backside of American exceptionalism. This idea that you know we're our shit doesn't stink. We're better than everybody else, and they're all clamoring to come here to have whatever we have. You know, and so therefore they're all a little, you know, sort of. We don't want to touch them even. They're untouchables, the people outside the great United States. So, you know, I mean, we have to get over this American exceptionalism because it's turning us into, you know, exceptional idiots. That basically, like you say, we're these peasants aren't educated and all that, but they understand what's coming down, what's going on.
They do.
Whereas
they have to.
Here, because, you know, we think we're so much better than everybody else that, you know, it's simply a matter of, well, we got to get rid of these guys and bring our guys in, and then everything's going to be wonderful, you know, and well, yeah, make America great again, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But
that's been for a long time.
It's
like that patent, you know, the patent medicine guys and stuff that used to go around back in the
right.
in the
snake oil
1800s.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, people fell for that too. It's like it's an American trait. You know, we're ready for the next sucker.
Right.
Oh my God!
The music.
We got to close. We're closing a little early today. The network just let me know we've got some serious stuff going on.
This is the end.
Oh man,
this is the end of the show.
Okay, yeah. Boom, boom, boom. All right, guys.
Hello, guys. May have been Camelot for Jack and Jacqueline, but on the Che Guevara highway, filling up with gasoline. Fidel Castro's brother spies a rich lady who's crying over the luxury's disappointment, so he walks over and he's trying to sympathize with her, but he thinks that he should warn her that the third world is just around the corner. Soviet Union, a scientist is blinded by the resumption of nuclear testing, and he is reminded that Dr. Robert Oppenheimer's optimism fell at the first hurdle. The cheese pavilion, and the only noise I hear is the sound of someone stacking chairs and mopping up spilled beer, and someone asking questions and basking in the light at the 15 fame-filled minutes of the fanzine writer.
pop and politics. He asks me what the use is. I offer him embarrassment for my usual excuses while looking down the corridor out to where the van is waiting. I'm looking for the right leap forward. Jungle sales are organized and pamphlets have been posted. Even after closing time, there's still parties to be hosted. You can be active with the activists asleep. And cut out the middle man. Right, please.